Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Srishtam Manamapi Shachiputramatrasrupam Rupam Tasyagrajamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi. Vande ham shri guru shri atafpada kamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatan vitam tam sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagarna Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitanscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare I'll speak some more about that which is by far and away at the present time the biggest topic of discussion around the world, namely the COVID coronavirus, COVID-19. Just one thought I had yesterday that now in order to help check the spread of this disease, it's become mandatory in many countries that people in public places have to wear face masks to stop the spittle from one's mouth coming close to or landing on the body of another person, and there's also social distancing. But I just thought about this yesterday, that there was, as part of Indian culture, which is dying away, like most facets of Indian culture, that when a person speaks to someone else, especially when a junior speaks to a senior, puts his hand in front of his face so that the spittle doesn't come. And doesn't come very close, maintains some distance out of respect. So there you are. Maybe in India we don't need these face masks. We can just return to the old culture. Today, I'd like to speak on COVID-19 and the failure of humanity. I already spoke on COVID-19 and the failure of civilization, but this is a little bit different. Because by humanity I mean here that the qualities we might expect of decent people, such as compassion, concern for others, which is very close to compassion, truthfulness. These are the qualities which we would expect of good people. And we expect that most people in the world are good. At least there's some ideal or some dream like that. And especially we'd think that the leaders of nations should be good people who care for their citizens, and who care for the world and making a situation in the world in which everyone can live peacefully, if not happily, but at least peacefully. But then if you're peaceful, you're happy. If you're not peaceful, you're not happy. Equitably, that means without one person or one people taking undue advantage of others. And especially during this time of worldwide crisis, as we're told, it's a worldwide crisis. We might have thought that the leaders of nations would put aside their differences and meet, at least on the internet, and try to work out what's best for the whole of humanity, how to tackle this problem all together. I don't know if anyone's even proposed that or thought of that. It's just taken for granted that everyone's out to do what they can, the best for their own little tribal group. Even if someone did something wrong, the Chinese are accused of doing so many wrongs, they weren't honest, they weren't careful enough in stopping all this. Earlier the Chinese were accusing the Americans of waging bio-warfare, and the Americans were charging the Chinese, so those accusations seem to have been dropped. But there's a blame game going on. But wouldn't it be better if all the leaders got together like mature, intelligent people, which you might hope they would be, and say, okay, all right, you made some mistakes, maybe we made some mistakes, let's get together and make a global policy to try to combat this pandemic. But instead we find the big world leaders blaming each other to shift the blame of their own failings, apparently taking advantage of the situation to promote their own political agendas, verging on a little political commentary here, but taking undue advantage in some cases of the situation to pass laws and make changes in society that will have long-reaching effects, which they wouldn't have been able to do very easily if they hadn't assumed these far-ranging powers, which they have done, in the name of this pandemic. At the present time, there's a rivalry going on to see who can come up with a vaccine first, if at all. Shouldn't it be that the great vaccinologists of the world work together, pool their intelligence, their skills, their knowledge, their realizations, but instead they're working in competition to see who's the best. Our country is the best because we came up with the vaccine. And then they'll patent it and sell it to others, I guess. They'll make a big profit out of it. A certain nation, well, it's America, bullied the Indian government into sending quinine-based medicine used for malaria, which is widespread in India, with the idea, they bullied them, saying, you better do it, otherwise we'll impose sanctions on you. And India can't afford to be sanctioned anymore by America. So they bullied them to send supplies of that medicine, which we're not sure if it works or not, and the death rate from this virus doesn't seem to be particularly improved or lessened by getting this medicine. But the point is that they bullied India. They didn't think that, well, maybe Indians need it also, or maybe we could ask India to share it around the world. Well, the present president of America did come in with the America First. That was one of his slogans. There's no relief for populations under military attack. You might have thought that, well, let's just stop all the military activities, attacks, and countries which are, some countries in the Middle East are heavily sanctioned by certain Western powers. So that their populations are already suffering tremendously. They can't get medical supplies even previous to this. You'd think that in this situation the sanctions would be lessened or lifted on a humanitarian basis, but no. They let their children die. That seems to be the message. Another symptom of the failure of humanity is the big fuss that's being made about this disease altogether, when there are so many, for instance, malaria-borne diseases which have ravaged populations in Africa and Southern Asia, Southeast Asia for generations and killed who knows how many people and a lot of suffering. It used to be just malaria was famous, and if anyone's had malaria, they'll know it's, well, there's mild and there's severe, but it's a very unpleasant disease and recurring. And then there's dengue, known as dengue in India, and chikungunya. Where did that come from? That's not widespread now, but it was for several years. And of course it can come back again, and maybe there's some others also. Any others you can think of? It used to be just malaria. So the point I'm making here is that there was never any serious effort from the major pharmaceutical companies or the governments of the world to try to stop this. Why? Well, one reason is because it's in poor countries, and who the hell cares? Maybe it's better if they all die off anyway. But when something threatens the richer countries also, then they become so concerned. Now you may say, well, that was something that was going on previously. So the COVID-19 is not a failure of humanity. There was already the failure of humanity prior to that, but it brings it into focus, that's all, if anyone even thinks about this thing, these things. There was a hope in my childhood when people were still idealistic, maybe some people still are, that by mass education, the idea is that we'll educate the whole population and then everyone will become enlightened and good. And then the world will be nice. The main problem is we have all this rabble of uneducated people. We educate them all, and they'll all become good. And the time I was growing up was the time of the hippie so-called revolution, in which people who had been born with all the advantages of modern civilization without having to struggle for them, which their parents struggle for. And they had, the hippies were mostly from affluent, educated backgrounds. So they had everything that was supposed to make them good, but they rejected it and became idealistic in another way and bestial in some ways also. But anyway, the idea that just by giving education and getting everyone good jobs, and then everyone will be happy. That's the idea also, and that's some idea in Kashmir at the present time. The part of India, the part of Kashmir that's under Indian government control, which is from the Indian government perspective, or It's a terrorist hotspot. So how to counteract that? We need to make jobs. And then when everyone has enough jobs, enough money, and then they'll be peaceful and happy. It's a nice idea. I don't know if it's possible to implement that. But it's just in general the idea that if people have everything they need materially, and then everything will be nice. But again, the hippie revolution showed that even... Well, again, it was a failure of humanity or humanitarianism. One of the things they were protesting about was the Vietnam War, which didn't seem to make any sense. What was the point of sending the flowers of our youth, the young men of America, to some distant land which people have never heard of, just like people in America, the vast majority had never heard of Iraq before one of the presidents of the United States decided that they needed billions of dollars of American aid in the form of bombs and missiles and the presence of the U.S. Army and on their heads, bombs on their heads. So, so what was the point of this war? No, to counteract communism. That was the idea. So they, of course, if they're really serious, they could have attacked Russia, but I guess they thought Vietnam, it's a bit easier to overcome than Russia, so we'll attack. They already failed in Korea. Whoops, I'm not supposed to be talking politically here or sarcastically. Anyway, the point is that the idea of humanity, we're all good, we are the good people. You'll always find in the press in Britain and America that we are the good people and the others are the bad people. We need to attack Iran because they're the bad people and we're the good people. We need to attack Iraq so that we can bring in democracy and all the good things that go with it. So that's, but we see that the idea that people will be good, or that we are good, naturally we must be good, we are the good people, it's not true. We see that even the most of the people in the Western countries, they're at least literate, you could, if you want to call that educated. They're at least they can read and probably write to some extent. And most of the world leaders are well-educated. I mean, they're not super PhDs and all this kind of thing. And PhD, that's also overrated. There are thousands and thousands of PhDs coming out every year. But if they're not well-educated, the world leaders, at least they're educated in the school of hard knocks. They know how to... The school of hard knocks, just by experience of living in the world there and getting bashed around by it. But practically speaking, we see from this response how the leaders are calling each other bad. Actually, it's more one way than the other way. But calling each other bad names and putting the blame on them. It's like tribal consciousness. The idea that everyone will be educated. I believe this idea first arose in Britain. And Britain has a history going back hundreds of years of proletariat youth gangs who fight and brawl with each other. And it was thought that, well, we'll educate everyone, then they'll all become good. But Britain still has proletariat gangs who fight and brawl with each other. The football hooligans of Britain being famous for that. So what are these gangs? There were two main groups when I was a kid, apart from the football hooligans. I think the football hooliganism really increased a lot Yeah, around that center. The mods and the rockers. And the mods dressed in a certain way, had a certain hairstyle, and rode on scooters. And the rockers dressed in leather jackets and went on motorcycles. And they fought with each other. And it got pretty nasty at some point. There were a few killings and this and that. So the idea that will improve, but what is that? Mods are gangs fighting with each other. Catholics and Protestants in Ireland. You might think that, well, racism. See, we don't like those Africans. We don't like them. But if there are no Africans, then you'll fight among yourselves. In Ireland, there was fighting going on for decades between Catholics and Protestants. If you look at someone, just by looking at them, you can't tell whether they're a Catholic or Protestant. You have to ask which school they went to. And if it was St. Patrick's School, you know, it was, then you know it was a Catholic school. And if it was, by knowing the school, you could find out. And what's the reason? Because some hundreds of years ago, there was a fight between a Protestant, he wasn't even a king, from Holland, in the southern part of what's now the southern part of Ireland, and he defeated the Catholic king. But they weren't fighting so much because they're Protestants or Catholics or any such thing. That's just, anyway. It's tribalism. We think that we've come above the platform of the people living in jungles who just, they kill an animal, eat it, and jump on some woman, and then 9 months later there's some screaming little wretch pops out of her belly. But we've risen above that. Now we're very sophisticated. Giving the Vedic perspective, not a psychological perspective or a what you might call a scientific perspective or a humanitarian perspective. Vedic's perspective. Veda means knowledge. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Ahara nidrabhaya maitunam cha samanam etat pashubhya naranam. This is not a religious belief. It is a observable fact that no one can disagree with, that humans and animals both eat and sleep and fear, which leads them to fight and defend. Eating, sleeping, and mating and defending. These are the activities which humans do and animals do. So if you want to say humans are better than animals, what's the difference? Gyanena, gyano hitesham, adhiko vishesham, gyanena vina pashubhyanaranam, gyanena hinam. Someone who does not have knowledge, they are a human who has. The difference between an animal and a human is knowledge. So if a human doesn't have knowledge, then he's on the platform of an animal. Well, you may say, well, animals also have knowledge. Yeah, but their knowledge is restricted to eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And you may say, well, humans are very much more sophisticated than that. We have art and architecture. Well, the birds also sing their songs in the morning. We don't know if that's connected to eating, sleeping, mating, or defending. It just seems to be some artistic expression in the morning, throughout the day, especially in the morning. They sing their songs. But basically, the whole society is based on eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's all. Humans, they do that, and animals don't do that. So what does it mean that one who has got knowledge, what is the distinguishing characteristic of a human distinguishing from an animal is knowledge? Well, here, knowledge doesn't mean amassing information and organizing it in such a way that one can create hypersonic missiles for destroying populations on the other side of the world, or any of the other great achievements of modern civilization. Knowledge here means rising above the platform of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. To understand our true spiritual position. We want that people we will be good. And we think that good means to live in such a way that we can all peacefully, happily, cooperatively eat, sleep, mate, and defend. But that would put us on the platform of ants, who within their own community peacefully, happily cooperate to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Of course, they have fighting against other. They may have fighting against other insects or predators or whatever, and they don't act in a very humanitarian way. We don't expect ants to act in. Sometimes you see an animal like a frog, which is half dead and can hardly move, and the ants start to pick the body, they start eating him alive, literally. Not very humanitarian. We might think that humans would be better than that. But then again, we find in human society there is torture. Probably by now someone's written a history of torture. And it's going on at the present time, even as I'm speaking here. No doubt. There is someone somewhere, if not more than one, someone somewhere who's being tortured. Literally, I mean, there's mental torture or psychological torture. That's a bit nebulous, but actual physical torture. Probably it's going on somewhere, someone is doing to someone. So what is this knowledge? What is this knowledge that distinguishes humans from animals? Actually puts them on a higher platform where they can act in an actually human way. Well, that knowledge is knowledge that simply to live peacefully and happily and cooperatively doesn't constitute humanity, because animals also do that. And therefore, we can analyze humans in terms of biological functions. You can analyze the human male genital and compare it with the male or the genital of a male orangutan and come up with some theories of how they descended from a common ancestor or something like this. So you're going to analyze it. You're going to analyze the human body biologically and even the social functions. And you can analyze biologically. Desmond Morris wrote The Naked Ape, analyzing the human beings in terms of just as if you're analyzing the behavior of an orangutan. So he analyzed the behavior of humans, their eating habits, sleeping habits, mating habits, fighting habits, and then the social habits he did in another book called The Human Zoo, especially of modern societies, city life, urban life. But knowledge which can actually bring out our good qualities is dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. Knowledge of dharma, which is sometimes translated as religion, but it has a more profound sense than any word in English can convey. Dharma ultimately means to act in a manner in accord with our own true nature, which is good. We understand from jnana, from knowledge that we receive from the Vedas, which is above the above the platform of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We also have knowledge of dharma, of who we actually are. We're not a sophisticated animal. We are not humans, exactly, because we are eternal spiritual beings who are presently in a human body. And prior to this, we've been in animal bodies, dog bodies, cat bodies, scorpion bodies. I saw a scorpion here just before Mangalarti. First time I saw here in Salem. And so many different bodies, but we are eternal living beings who are meant for Shinvantu Vishve Amritasya Putra. We are sons of, or we have our birthright of immortal life. We are meant for that. So that knowledge we get from the Vedas, which the Vedas also give knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is also there of how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend in this world in such a way that we can transcend the animalistic platform of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, which will go on as long as we have these bodies. But in human life, there is the opportunity to act in a manner that is in accord with our true spiritual identity. So in other words, acting for the sake of higher realization, spiritual realization. Otherwise, for all our sophistication in building big buildings and putting more and more junk into space in the name of human society's advancement and making more and more sophisticated weapons for destroying other populations, we haven't risen above the platform of animals. In one sense, yeah, because we're more sophisticated in doing what animals do, but that means it's the consciousness is on the platform of animals, and therefore we can see that we don't have compassion for other people. At least we don't find in the political leaders of the world, they're concerned with their own people. Why should one big powerful nation bully another nation into sending their medicine? It means they're only compassionate for their own little group, or big group, numerically speaking, and not compassionate for another group. It's tribalism. I'm big and strong, you're weak, you've got the medicine that we want, give it, or we're going to bash you. Tribalism. No basic compassion. Computerized slaughterhouses, very sophisticated. What is that? We never had any compassion for the slaughter of so many animals. Now, I read that every week in the United States of America, prior to the difficulties caused by the response to this pandemic, caused by the pandemic itself, the slaughterhouses have to close down because too many of the workers in the slaughter, they're all getting affected by the sickness, by the pandemic. So what do you do with all the pigs? 2.5 million pigs a week killed in America. 2.5 million pigs a week. That's a real holocaust, isn't it? And what to speak of cows, chickens, fish. We never cared for the slaughter of these animals. We never cared for the slaughter of people, say, for instance, in Yemen, which our nice, respectable, sophisticated, civilized countries are sending weapons to kill citizens in some country. We don't care for them. There was never any compassion for them. But when it comes to us, our own group, oh, then we have to take all measures to protect ourselves. So it means that it's not that the pandemic is bringing out our inner humanism, but it's just, it was already there. But if anyone has the eyes to see, it's underlining it. But then so many people didn't have the eyes to see that by slaughtering so many animals, slaughtering so many humans, by selling weapons to people who you know are going to use them against civilian populations, they didn't have the eyes to see that. Actually, most people we see at the present time, maybe not most people, but we can see that it's a major area of concern that here in India, how we can get the professional cricket games going again. And in Europe, it's a big thing, how we can get the professional soccer games going again. That's a matter of great concern. The fact that so many people are dying, it doesn't seem to bother them so much. They're anxious to get out of the lockdown so they can go back to their full-fledged partying, boozing, useless sports. We see here in India that when the liquor shops were opened in Bangalore and Delhi, it was like a major celebration, and it was, the government's got their money, the alcoholics got their alcohol, and then they closed it all down again because they couldn't control people. How wonderful, we can get back to boozing. It's all they really wanted to do. Is this civilization? Is this humanity? Is this humanism? So what is the solution? Well, a failure of humanity. We should become humans instead of becoming sophisticated suit and tie and polished shoes, animals scheming how to kill other sophisticated suit and tie, polished shoes, animals in the name of human beings. We really have to rise to higher platform of consciousness and act on a higher level. That would mean stopping slaughterhouses. We know that some people are so low class and that they'll eat meat. So we don't say stop meat altogether, but you want to eat meat, then you kill the animal yourself. No slaughterhouses. Or you can take some animal that has naturally died and you can eat that. Actual humanity means no illicit sex. Illicit sex means exploiting others. This mass intoxication. Governments, if they really care for their people, they should stop this. But they themselves are all intoxicated. These are the pillars of civilization. Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, in Britain, the most civilized country in the world, speaking to the Earl of Zetland, Lord Ronaldshay, from the aristocracy of Britain. That's really the highest point of civilization. Britain itself is most civilized because they managed to get ahead of all others and stomp all over the world and get control of different populations and exploit them and build big buildings in Britain. And then the lords. Oh, these are really the highest class. So when Lord Ronaldshay, who had been in India, he met Goswami Maharaj in England and jokingly asked him, Lord Ronaldshay jokingly asked Goswami Maharaj, can you make me a Brahmana? And Goswami Maharaj said, yeah, very easily I can make a Brahmana. So How do you do it? Well, you just have to stop meat eating, gambling, intoxication, and illicit sex. Immediate reply, impossible. This is our life. This is what we live for. This is their civilization. This is their humanity. So you can't expect, if people are in the consciousness of animals, that they're going to act in an even what we would call humanitarian way. They might make a little show. They go and bomb people and blast them, and then they send in a few doctors to treat them as a show. They may do something like that. People have to come to the higher platform of understanding what is the real purpose of human life, not simply to eat, sleep, mate, and defend, but to understand, who am I? Who is God? Why is there suffering in this world? How to transcend suffering? The real tragedy is not that so many people are dying from this virus, because anyway people are going to die, but they're dying in ignorance. They're born in ignorance and they die in ignorance, which means they have to go back to the animal species for many, many lifetimes. That's the real tragedy. And that's happening en masse. The vast majority of people at the present time, they're born in ignorance. Anyway, everyone's born in ignorance in this material world. Agyana timirandhasya, in the darkness of ignorance. But there's no program to elevate them to a higher platform. Education is there. Education, how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. How to be a good automaton or robot in a society, and so you can be good and respectable, and if you're a good boy or girl or something in between or something outside of those two classes, then we'll give you more facilities to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So anyway, humankind is a failure. Human life is meant for God realization. Animal life is meant for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are unavoidable in human life also. They must be there. But if we live only for these things, then we're no better than animals. So anyway, COVID-19 or no COVID-19, anyway, humanity is a failure. But there is hope. Gyano hitesham adhiko vishesham. The special prerogative or possibility in human life is to attain knowledge of our higher spiritual situation. So, although we don't expect very quickly any major turnaround in the animalistic outlook of human society, although we don't know, things can change drastically in unexpected ways, as we have seen with this pandemic. It's the whole course of human so-called civilization for so many generations has changed drastically in the last few months. So there can be many changes, major changes, in most unexpected ways. But at the present time, we haven't seen any overt signs that the whole of human society is going to wake up and think, hey, what are we doing for our spiritual life? We haven't seen any signs of that. But at least individually, we can make a start in understanding who we are and what is the real use of human life that can lift us beyond the animal platform. It's not just a matter for this life, but if we don't raise ourselves above the animal platform, then we have to take birth as an animal again. That's the tragedy. Human life is rare. We get it after many, many births in the lower species. But if we don't rise above the consciousness of animals, then naturally we go back. If we don't come up to the platform above that of animals, then we go back to the platform animals. That means we get born again. These are the laws of nature that people don't know. The scientists, they study so many laws of nature and also insanely say there's no lawmaker, but they don't know the subtle laws of nature, that if we don't raise ourselves above the platform of animals in this rare human form of life with the special intelligence that we have in this human form of life, and then we have to go back down physically. If mentally, psychologically, we don't raise ourselves above the platform of animals, then physically also we'll have to go back to that platform. So at least individually we can start to rise above that platform by taking knowledge from those who know. I, for instance, am one who knows. May sound very proud, but it's just like if someone says, well, I'm a professor of the history of English language. If he says he knows, it's specialized knowledge. If he says, it doesn't necessarily mean he's proud that he knows. But I happen to know. I've been educated in this knowledge. I know. There are many around the world who know. But people are not taking advantage. They think this Hare Krishna sect, if they think of it at all, they don't take it very seriously. But it is very special because we have knowledge from Bhagavad Gita spoken by the person who is Purushottama above all others, who knows what's going on and informs us through the medium of Bhagavad Gita, which the knowledge in there begins with teaching us that we are not the body, we're separate from the body, the body is always changing. I, the eternal spirit soul, do not change. You may or may not believe in changing bodies in reincarnation, but I can practically say from my own experience in this short lifespan, I'm, according to the body, 63 years old now. And if I think back to my childhood body, there are some memories. But where is that body now? That young, healthy, energetic, where is that? And when I think of those times 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it seems 40, 50 years ago, it seems like a dream. I can feel even in this lifetime how I've changed. But I am the same person. This is the Bhagavad Gita begins with the most essential knowledge for human society that we need to know to transcend the platform of animals and utilize the human form of life in the manner that it should be utilized. And so many things are explained therein. So if you're locked down, which it's easing up now, around the world. So anyway, you can take advantage of this. Read Bhagavad Gita as it is and take knowledge from people who can actually help you. What's the use of amassing all kinds of information about things which are not for our ultimate benefit? You say, yeah, well, it's a great benefit to humanity that we've learned so many things. But what is the ultimate benefit if we die like a dog in ignorance and take birth as a dog? No benefit ultimately whatsoever. So real benefit comes from knowing who we are, why we're in this position in this material world. It's not a good position. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending leads to birth, death, old age, and disease repeatedly. But if we get this knowledge, then automatically people, they'll become humans, good people, in the manner that we might hope them to be good. They won't exploit others because they're not greedy to get any advantage over others. That's it. All the different leaders of societies are trying to show, my people are the best. You're wrong, we're good, you're bad. All this childish, tribalistic rivalry will go away when people understand. I'm an eternal living being. I am internal part of Krishna. I have no need to, no motive to try to exploit others. And then all good qualities will come automatically. And without that, we can only expect people, for all their intelligence, to act in a most inhuman manner. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyavacha. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnava.